Vicious Merino, absolutely, sir. This is a subject which was requested by one of our invisible listeners, who is very into high tech, and suggested that this subject be raised. You might say to me, well, what's the big question? Internet piracy is illegal. That's the end of it. You don't need to share about the subject. But we'll see what we discover. As a preamble, without wishing to repeat the words of our Gedolim, our Rabbonim, it's important for everyone to remember the well-known dangers of the Internet, and the precautions are all necessary, filters and so on, and that we can see it as something like a kitchen knife. It's something which can do something very, very good and something which might do something very, very bad. A bit like annual general meetings, where one can raise the spiritual level to something to make the community above all others, or one can diminish the standard of the community. Similarly, a knife might do something very good, cutting food, serving food, doing mitzvahs, shechita, bris milah, and a knife might do something very bad. It's the same with the internet. There is so much wealth of Torah now on the internet where you can learn so many different things, and that goes without saying, but there has to be precautions. We said in yesterday's parasha, Kadoshim Tiyu, you shall be holy, and the words are said L'chol Adas B'nai Yisrael, to every single person in the Kehillah of Adas Yisrael. Why? Says the Alshich HaKadosh, nobody should say, oh, I can't reach up to the same high madrega as everybody else. He says, nobody should think that I'm not good enough, or I will not be able to achieve Kedusha. The idea of speaking to Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael is that everybody is able to achieve Kedusha, and nobody can say I'm not on a sufficient madrega. Coming on to the subject of internet piracy, somebody by the name of Anton Vickerman was jailed last August for a period of 4 years. He was making £60,000 a month from people who are downloading music and films from his website, which cost the industry tens of millions of pounds because he had obtained these items of music and films illegally. So as I said already, what's the question? Internet piracy is obviously against the din. It's stealing. Lo sig novo, as we learned in yesterday's sedra. So what if you say, well, I'm not really stealing. I wouldn't have really bought that music in any case. It wasn't my intention to buy it, but I was only downloading one album. So I don't believe that the owner is coming to any loss. He's not losing out, because as I wouldn't have bought it in any case, then he's not getting money from a sale either way. So it's no skin off his nose if I do some downloading. And besides, there's nothing really tangible about it. So the question is there something halachic to prevent one from taking something from somebody else, where you're not actually taking a physical item out from their premises in the traditional form of theft or burglary, where the person comes into his living room and there's nothing missing? Do you say that that is theft or not? Or do we say, well, the halacha doesn't really provide for it, but we've always got dinah de malchus hadinah, because the law of the land makes it very clear that you cannot download illegally. And both in America and in this country, people have been prosecuted for downloading stuff illegally. All right, you might say it doesn't happen that often, it's not really enforced. Does dinah de malchus hadinah apply when something is not really enforced? And people do try all these kinds of drays, but we'll have a look at it. So there are a number of rabbonim who write about the subject of the internet and the subject of piracy, the subject of viruses. Can you hook up to somebody else's Wi-Fi? We'll see how much time we got to go into all that. But Rav Leibovitz writes that you've got to imagine it's like a toll on a bridge. So you're traveling along and you come to a bridge and everybody has to pay a toll. So you say, why should I have to pay the toll? Because I could have taken a different route. If I take a different route, then they wouldn't have got the money in any case. So what difference is it to the manufacturers of the bridge whether I pay the toll or not? But building bridges costs money. And how are they going to pay for it? So they're going to pay for it by people who are crossing it. It's the same with the music industry. And this idea of the bridge is really in the Gemara itself, in Gemara Sukkah, Daf Lamed, in Perek Lulav HaGadol, which talks about you may not use a stolen lulav. And the Gemara there says, mitzvah habo ba'aveira. You cannot do a mitzvah which is derived from an aveira. It's not even a mitzvah at all if you take the lulav, because it's stolen. So the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sone gezel ba'ola. Hashem doesn't like stolen property which are offered up to him in an offering like the Ola. It's like the king telling his servant to pay a tax, and the servant says, Your Majesty, why do we have to pay the tax? You are the king. All the money which is paid for the toll comes to you in any case. So why should you pay the tax? So the king says, I don't want people to think it's okay. If people see me paying the tax, say to go over the bridge, the meches, then everybody else will follow my example and will pay it as well. So some people will say, yeah, but if I am benefiting from something which I'm not causing a loss to the other person in a physical way, then surely there is a Talmudic principle called Zeneh Nevezelo Choser. Zeneh Nevezelo Choser means I'm benefiting and the other person isn't really losing out, because it's not my intention to go into a music shop and buy a CD or whatever it is, and therefore he's not losing out if I just download this for my private personal use. There is even a principle in the Gemara called Tofin al Midas Sodom. That is to say that something which doesn't cost you anything to allow other people to use, you should really enable other people to use it. The Mishnah in Pekei Avos talks about Midas Sodom being what's mine is mine and what yours is yours. Really, the correct approach, the tzaddik's approach, is what mine is yours and yours is yours, and one should be willing to share one's property. The classic example is that Yeshua made a rule that if a person has a walk and wishes to make a short cut over a person's field, then providing the crops are not growing at that time and you can't damage the crops in that field, then you have to allow people a right of way to make a short cut over your field. So that is a gezeira which Yeshua made, that people should enable others to make use of their land if it enables them to make a short cut. Ah, on the other hand, you could say, yes, but I'm losing out if my crops will be damaged, and the rule does not apply when my crops are growing. So in the same way, I'm losing out. If I've got music to sell, or I've got books to sell, and people are circumventing it by downloading or copying those books illegally, then surely I have the right to protect my interests. What about a squatter? If a squatter goes into a property and he says, look, the property is empty in any case, why should I pay a rent? I'm not harming the property. In fact, I'm looking after it for the landlord. You know, the fact that I'm making it secure, I'm preventing others coming in and damaging it. So has the squatter got squatter's rights in halacha? Tosfos in Baba Basra, Daf Yud Beis, discusses this. Does the squatter have to pay? The Gemara says that if it's not really available for renting, then he doesn't have to pay. He doesn't allow a person to squat, the chachila. There is a rule about that. But there is another principle in Gemara Baba Kama Daf Chof, Kaima Le'igra. What's Kaima Le'igra? Where is it available for letting? And there is a mistake, it says, that people make in distinguishing between different kinds of assets. So Rashi then, Baba Kama Daf Chof, Dula Maschil V'zeh Choser, he says, a Choser is generally called Kaima Le'igra, where it is available for hiring out, and then a person should be expected to pay rent. But what is this available for hiring out? Is it a subjective judgment? So the Rambam writes in Hilchas Torah V'nitan Perek Ches Halachotes, Altis Efein Zeroim Hoasuyin La'ashil, don't make a mistake between those things which are made for hiring out and for maybe lending out. Shedarkon La'ashil, ask it. It is the way of hiring them out. But people make a mistake by confusing it with what is ru'uyin lahashil, what is fit for lending out or hiring out, and one lends out. Because if that's the case, if people think that things are fit for hiring out, then people might say, well, my bed is worthy of being hired out, and therefore they can use my bed, as in Goldilocks. It's not that. It's what is the intention of the owner. The intention of the owner is, I don't want anybody to use this, therefore it's not to be used. But squatting is the question of, if it's available for renting, then the person should pay the rent. The question which arises is really what we call in modern language intellectual property. Is there such a thing in halacha as intellectual property, where I'm taking an idea from you? Let's say your wife dreams up a recipe and she's planning to write a cookery book. Has she got sole rights on that recipe, or can I use it for somebody else? Or for that matter, if I'm driving down a specific shortcut and I give you a lift, and I don't want other people to know about my shortcut to Heathrow Airport, because if everybody uses it, it will get congested. But it's a brilliant route which I've worked out for myself, having for many hours pondered over the maps which are outside the A to Z of London. So I take great pride in the fact that I know this route. And then I give a lift to somebody and I say to somebody, look, don't tell anybody about this route because it's my idea and I don't want others to know about it. Have I got the right to protect that? That's what you call in English law intellectual property.
It doesn't
matter, yeah, but the sat-nav will always take you on the main road. The sat-nav will never take you on this route, which I've worked out for Heathrow Airport. It's such a brilliant route. It never gets congested. It always goes quick. I know exactly how long it will take. And so can I protect this? Have I got the right to protect this? Because what we're talking about with downloading stuff from the internet is very much this idea of intellectual property. And then there's the subject, of course, of people writing forim, of people writing books. What about Chidushei Torah? You say, well, you can't expect to keep a copyright on Torah. Surely Torah is for the masses. Torah is for everybody to learn. So have I got the right to stop somebody from making photocopies and distributing them of a sefer that I've written? All right, it's happened, the one that I've written, somebody in Johannesburg was making lots of photocopies, and he was selling them. So did I have a right to come along to him and say, look, please don't do that? And he can say to me, well, you know, it's Torah. Shouldn't you want to spread the word of Torah? And then I can say to him, yes, I know, but I had an expense, or my publisher had an expense in printing my work, and my publisher is losing out because he's not selling the books which he put the expense into for printing, and therefore it's not right that you should be breaching that copyright. And every single art scroll you've got in big black letters, the rights of the copyright holder will be strictly enforced. So there you have it. Reb Moshe Feinstein in the Shalas Chuvas Igris Moshe Aruch Haim Chelik Dalet Simon Mem in section Yotef, he says stealing intellectual property is definitely gezeilah. It is theft. Even if the person says, well, I wouldn't otherwise have bought it. He says it's simply a matter of sora. The fact is that if you say, well, I wasn't going to buy your Jaguar car, does that give me a justification to use it, to go and steal it? Of course not. Just because I wouldn't have bought it. So a cassette tape, he says, produced as an expense in order that people will buy it, it's not right that other people should duplicate it, so that is theft. And a few months ago we spoke about a sefer called Kuzari Sheni of Rav Nieto, who was the Rav Rashi in London of the Sfardim in 1701. His sefer was reproduced years later, in the year 1780, at the instruction of the Shagas Aryeh, who was the Rav of Metz. And he made a takona that nobody else may reproduce this sefer for a specific number of years in order that the printer could recoup his costs in bringing out this sefer. Because if everybody else would print it, then the printer would lose out and it would not be fair. So he made a takona. There's a tshuva called Machane Chaim. And he talks about an example where somebody was presenting Chidushei Torah as though they were his own Chidushim. And he discusses this in his Shuvas Choshen Mishpat Chelik Bei Simon Mentes, and he quotes a Gemara in Sanhedrin Nuntes, where there's a question of those people who are not commanded to learn Torah, namely the Akum, are they then breaching something? Are they then allowed to just learn Torah if they were not commanded to at Har Sinai? Torah is a marosho, it's an inheritance. And we do have our non-Jewish friends who have really taken what they call the Old Testament, they've stolen it from us, they've breached our copyright, and then they claim that it's their Bible, and then they've manufactured and translated it in order to suit their whims, or should I say mistranslated it, and then they say it's replaced by a New Testament. So there you've got a real breach of copyright. They've taken something which is belonging to us, marosho, given to us by Hashem at Har Sinai. that you keep Shabbos on the seventh day, that you don't wear shatnas, etc. And what do? They say, well, Shabbos is on another day, and you don't have to worry about this, and you don't have to worry about that. So they've done a real breach of copyright. That's intellectual property. That's stealing. So the Malach Nechaim talks about the Gazman. He says, "Kol ish hashaleach yod b'chochmas Torah chaveira." Anybody who takes a chiddush Torah of somebody else, asher zocha b'chelkem in hashemayim, which a person has a merit from heaven, who gazlan gomor, he is a complete thief. But not everybody goes along with that view. There's a tshuva of the Maharam Shik who discusses this Malach Nechaim, and he says it's not so straightforward. Rav Moshe Shik lived in the years 1807 to 1879 from Hungary. He had a big yeshiva of 800 in the Ukraine. He fought the Haskalah movement, and he said it's not so straightforward. Because if you look in his tshuva, Yerodeh Simon Kufnun Vov, he says, if I steal a shofar, and I blow that shofar, are you yotza from the kol of that shofar? This is a din in Arachaim, Tovkot Pevov. He says, Mishum de'ein b'kol shum gezel. There isn't actually any theft in the sound of the shofar.
You haven't used up the shofar.
Pardon?
You haven't destroyed the shofar.
Okay, but the shofar is stolen. You may benefit with the mitzvah. It's not called mitzvah bob areva. With the lulav it is, because the mitzvah is within mitzvah of the actual lulav. Whereas the shofar, you're not actually, if there's a fine difference. The shofar is one aspect, and the sound from the shofar is another aspect. So he says, b'dovah shenishar b'shus ba'alim, lo nikro gezel. Something which remains in the property of the owners is not really gezel. So in the case of downloading, I'm taking something which doesn't belong to me, but the owner or the record company or the publisher, they still have all their assets in place. I haven't broken into their premises to take anything. So he feels that it's not proper stealing, but nevertheless, he says it's also. Why does he say it's also? Because of sheker. He says, if I am claiming chidushei Torah from somebody else on my own, then I'm lying. He says it's ganevas das. It's deception. It's defrauding in another way. But he says it's not called actual gezeilah. That's his view.
There you're selling it to others. Here you're just using it for yourself. You go to the chauffeur, you put it back. No, you know, you haven't taken anything from him, and you only use it for yourself. But you're selling something as usual.
Ah, but if I'm using it for my own personal purposes and I'm not selling it on, in his view, it might not be called gezeilah. He'll still say it's osur, it's forbidden in halacha, but under the category of gezeilah, where you have to pay back double, remember, if you steal. You may have to pay back four or five times if you steal. Certain perek of Baba Matzia, certain animals which you steal, you have to pay back four or five fold. But in his definition, it's not gezel, but it's forbidden. Another view.
That's
the Maharam Shik. Then there's another view. Then there's the Rav Shimon Shkop, a very famous Rosh Hashiva, was in Telz, and he is in his Kedushim, Baba Kama Simon Aleph. He says, on Gemara in Baba Kama Daf Chav Tes, he says, there are two things which are not really owned by you, but the Torah considers as though you own it. So his approach is a different mahalach completely to what we've discussed so far. He says, okay, it's something which you might not properly own, but the Torah considers as though you own it. And there are two things he says like this. One is a bor b'shus harabim. If you dig a pit in the street, it's not your property. But you dig this pit and an animal comes along and falls into it. Parshas Mishpatim, Lamed Gimel, Lamed Dalet, bor b'shus harabim. V'chi yiftach ish bor, says the Pasuk. If one opens the pit, or one digs the pit and one doesn't cover it, and an ox or an ass fall into it, the owner of the pit shall compensate, and the dead animal belongs to him. Thank you very much. Now he's got to get rid of it. Because the animal has died as a result of his pit. Now this pit, you could say, oh, it's not my land. If you look in the land registry, my name doesn't show there as the owner of the land. It's public highway land. But the Torah makes the pit as though it's his in order to make him responsible for his crime of making this pit. The other example of something which you don't own, but the Torah considers you own it, is chometz on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Because what the Torah is doing is the Torah is confiscating chometz from you in any case. Even if you don't do a bittul, even if you don't do a kol chamira, that chometz is really confiscated from you because it's worthless as well. You can't get hanor from it, you can't sell it. But the Torah, in a way, puts it back into your possession if you haven't done the mitzvah of tashbisu, of chucking out chometz, and then you're held liable. So those are the two things. So you don't own the road, but you're chayav for what happens. So he says you are recognized as the owner of intellectual property. Even if somebody might come along and argue, like the Maram Sheikh, that it can't legally really be called yours, he says the Torah holds responsible, just like you caused damage with a pit. So because you created the damaging force, you are considered the owner. So in the positive way, since you have created a concept, even though it might not be a tangible concept, you are nevertheless considered the owner. And he says, so that's the law of the land in any case. There's the idea of dinah d'malchus adinah. So one who invents something, he says, is the owner of all rights, and that is the law of the nations, as well as the law of the Torah. But it's mitzvah tzvara, obviously, a din of the Torah, based on what he says, that the Torah can make you the owner, even though it doesn't look like a tangible concept for you to own. The Shaul
Moshev... Sorry, I'm listening. What's the difference between the two? Why does that say my Jewish Torah?
Well, Rav Shimon Shkop is saying that if you don't think you actually own something tangible, the Torah puts it in your possession as that you are owning it, just because of the orderly nature of the world. That is to say that if you think that intellectual property is not something which I can steal from you because I can go and take it without entering your property and taking it out. So Rav Shimon Shkop is saying one is still liable because even if you think it's something which is not tangible, the Torah makes it yours. That's his svara. The Shaul HaMeshiv says you don't have to be so yeshivish. You don't have to be so longish. The Shaul HaMeshiv, Rav Yosef Nachumzon, who wrote the famous Shuvah Shaul HaMeshiv in Chelek Aleph, Simon Aleph in Mem Dalet, he says you don't need a source. You don't need to quote from something. It's a svara. He says it's pure, simple logic. And you don't need a posuk. You don't need a gemara if something is common sense. He says, if an author prints a book, he's got the rights of it forever, he says. No long. In English law, I think it's 50 years after one's death. But so he actually quotes a story of a Rav Avram Yaakov of Harobshop who made some little machine to calculate arithmetic. So some sort of calculator which existed 200 or 300 years ago. And because he benefited others with it, he had some grant and compensation from the Warsaw government. So he said, it's common sense that if you invent something, you have a patent on it, then you own a certain property, even though it doesn't look like it's something tangible. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not so clear-cut on the if it's not tangible, whether you own it. Certainly he says you are guilty of theft, mitzad dino de malchus adina, because that's the law of the land. And there's another inyan called minag b'nei ho'ir. There's a concept that if the whole town have a minag in Choshen Mishpot, Simon Shin Samaches in the Torah, where if the whole town has a custom about a certain concept of property rights, then that becomes Jewish law. So if everybody agrees to a standard, that standard becomes binding. And there's an idea, he says, of Hasagas Kavul, you're taking away somebody's livelihood. This is a person's panosa. If a person is manufacturing CDs and he's selling them, and then you go and copy them illegitimately, that person's losing out, he's losing his panosa. It's Masa Kavul, like opening up a shop next to another shop selling exactly the same thing. So what about a 30-day free trial? Can I, after the 30 days are up, renew it under another name with a different email address, download it again with a different name? Is there a law against it? Rav Aryeh Leibovitz says he thinks this is osur, because the idea of the 30-day free trial is that it's conditional on you giving a chance to try it out for a specified period by when you have to decide whether you buy it or not. And if you then continue using it ad infinitum, then you're obviously misusing the wishes of the owner. Now, we said before there's a certain principle of kofin amizah sodom, but kofin amizah sodom is when there's no likelihood whatsoever of the owner losing out. Like we said, where the landowner can prevent you from using his land as a shortcut when crops are growing. So, in any case, you can't use such a principle because you're copying music which is depriving the owner of selling. We spoke about the landlord and the Tosfos in Baba Basra. that if the squatter has already moved in, then the landlord may not take the rent if that premises was not ready for letting. But one can stop l'chadchila a squatter from moving in. One can take precautions and prevent the person moving in. And then in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, in Shin Samach Gimel Sifhei, it says that if a squatter would pay rent if the alternative is eviction, so that is to say that if the squatter knows that a court order is coming and he's going to be evicted and he would therefore be willing to pay rent in order to stay, then he should pay rent now. So it's not clear cut. Otherwise, you can't charge him the rent.
No, but he can't.
Yeah, then you can kick him out. The Mordechai writes in Bava Kama Siman Taf Zayin that if there's no possibility of letting, not simply that you haven't advertised it, but if it's ready to rent out and it was your intention to rent it out, then you can charge the rent or evict. But if there was no possibility of letting because it wasn't yet decorated, it needed new plumbing, it wasn't in a presentable state, then you can't force the squatter to pay rent and you can't then force him out. Sorry?
How do you decorate with him there?
Well, then you'll have to negotiate him out. But if you are saying, look, I had it in my schedule of works that I was going to start in the month of May to decorate, then he's got to get out by the month of May.
Why are you saying he doesn't have to get out? Okay, you're not losing, but...
If I have no intention of letting out this property for whatever reason, I just wanted to hold on to it as an investment, and I didn't want to have the headache of having tenants in with all their moans and groans and disturbances, then if a squatter goes in, then I cannot charge a rent.
I think if I charge a rent.
That's right.
Yeah, but you know,
if there's worry that the squatter will damage the property, are you worried about the wear and tear, then you can get him out. But if there's no such concern, then the halacha is saying leave him there.
Stealing. He's saying he's not stealing, therefore I can't get him out.
Lechachila, you can stop him going in. But once he's in, if you've got no intention whatsoever of letting and he's not causing damage, then the halacha does not enable you to evict him.
Is he liable for the damage if he does cause
damage? The squatter is obviously liable for damage. Yes, it's your property. There is something, just like in English law, called adverse possession in halacha as well. If somebody lives in a place for X number of years then, and it's not challenged, then he can claim it as his. But that's another subject for another time. Rabbi Cheskel Landau, in the Noda Bihuda, he writes in Choshen Nishmat Chelek Bei Simach Avdalad about a printer. Reuven has written a perush on the Gemara. So he goes to a printer, and he asks the printer to present the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, and underneath to put his own commentary. So the printer says, yeah, fine. He does this. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, with this Reuven's commentary. And then after Reuven's had his batch, and he goes away, pays for it, thank you very much, goodbye. Then the printer thinks to himself, I've already got set up with my printing blocks, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. So he decides to do another print run without Reuven's perush, and he sells it. So Reuven comes along and says, hold on a minute, that's not fair. I paid you for doing this print run. You're now benefiting from what I paid you in another way. And the printer says, look, you paid me for a print run, which I did, with your perush on it, which I did. What I do afterwards with these printing plates is my business. You can't claim anything from me. What's the deal? So the Noda Bihuda says that the printer should pay Reuven half sum of any profits. The printer claims he was entitled to dismantle the plates. He says there's no loss to Reuven, but the Rav Yecheskel Landau says no, he has to pay. And in this respect, he's really disagreeing with the Mordechai, who said that the squatter should not be charged any money. So according to the Noda Bihuda thing, you can still charge the squatter in the same way that Reuven can claim back any profit which is made as a result of that print run, because he paid for that original printing, even though afterwards his perush from it was dropped. He paid for Gemara Rashi and Tosfos to be printed. So he proves this from a Gemara in Bava Kama Tafchof, where if let's say A installs a boundary fence next to B's property. So it's a common boundary with B. And B says nothing. B is not asked to pay towards it, but B doesn't pay towards it. So A is shouldering the full cost of that fence, and B is not required to share that cost. Because A wanted to put up the fence, they didn't put up their fence. But let's say there was a little gap towards the end of the garden, and B comes along and fills up that gap, a small gap, with a new fence at his own expense, then A can say to him, hold on a minute, you've now shown with a giloy das that you want the whole fence. Therefore, I can now claim from you half the cost of the complete fence. And that's from the Gemara of Akama, and that's quoted by the Noda Behuda. So we can see how this bears on the subject of downloading something which is illegal. Rashi there says, once there's that giloy das, and obviously there's a giloy das when you download from the internet, that you want it. So if you want it, then you jolly well have to pay for it. However, there are some ambiguities in these tshuvas as to what would apply in certain circumstances, and it needs a competent rov. For example, if a teacher does buy the sefer, and for the convenience of his talmidim in his class, he makes a few photocopies, is that all right? Really, one should have permission from the author. I know that in certain local schools this has been going on. It's not correct if it's against the wishes of the publisher. Can I install a software on multiple computers in my home? If they say you may only download this on one computer, and I've got a number of computers in my house, can I take that software with its password and put it on all my computers in my house? I haven't found any answer to this to date in any rabbinic writings, but it's really a matter for discussion. Or let's say there's this business software, which I would never buy. May I borrow it from somebody for my personal use because I'm not using it for business purposes, and it's software which is intended for business purposes? Another question. May I transfer my CD to an MP3 player? Because it's to benefit me, so that when I walk around the park and I'm listening to my MP3 player, or do I need to buy a separate license when I'm downloading? That's also another question. Anyway, Rav Yeshua Flug, who's a Rosh HaKole Polo Ritan in New York, he says, according to Rav Yecheskel Landau, there is no loss to the producer. That nevertheless does not allow one to violate the producer's rights. But if you can say that the producer is being entirely unreasonable in their demands, I mean, when you go on buying the software and you click this box, I agree, I don't know how many of you actually read all the terms and conditions, which, as Colin was kindly pointing out to me, they are terrible, they're laborious, they're very hard to comply with in every sense. But you click that, I agree. If you can prove that it's entirely unreasonable for those conditions, then according to Rav Flug, you can then breach those conditions. However, if you've got Dina de Malchus Adina on your shoulders, you've got the law of the land to think about, then that is also the halacha. You have to comply with the law of the land, whether it's UK law or US law, and then the halacha will not add further restriction over and above the Dina de Malchus Adina. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia Ein Ches quotes about Rav Meir, who says, if one gives a dinar to a poor man and says, I'm giving this money to you in order that you buy a shirt, can this poor man then go and buy something else instead? Buy a cloak, a pint of beer, which often that's what they do. So is there a theft here if the poor man uses that money for another purpose which you have stipulated? So this is Rav Flug's way of looking at this clicking of the I agree. He says, whoever disregards the owner's stipulation is called a guzzler. That's the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Rav Meir. If one gives the dinar to the poor man. But the halacha isn't really like that Gemara. It's called inappropriate behavior. So according to the Psak Halacha, we don't go like Rav Meir in that Gemara, that if the poor man does go buy something else, he hasn't really stolen from you. But he's not behaving properly. He's not behaving with Menschlichkeit. But it's really only something which is really tangible. Otherwise, it's meaneless. The Chazanish goes into this in Evan Oezer, Siman Ein Gimel Yud Ches, that you have to have something a bit more tangible than that. There are arguments, but that's the way he presents it. Now, what about if I'm wanting just to use somebody's hotspot? I am travelling, I've got a laptop on me, and I want to check about certain emails I might have had. So what I do is I go past the property and I pick up a signal that I'm able to go onto the internet, and it's not secured. Most people nowadays have a password and it's secured. But if it's not secured, then I can use that person's internet, or may I use that person's internet, in order to benefit from it and look at my emails and look at the internet.
Does it cost him anything?
Ah, well, let's say it doesn't. The fellow is paying a subscription to his internet service provider regularly, month by month. He's not paying any more if the usage is intensified. It's a fixed sum per month. Can I therefore use this person, without his knowledge, without his permission, can I use his internet signal? That's the question. There are a number of Poskim who actually write about this. In this country, there is something called the Computer Misuse Act and the Communications Act 2003, and there was a case in Chiswick in 2007 where police officers spotted somebody sitting outside somebody's house on their garden wall, and he was using his laptop downloading things, and he got arrested by the police, and he was fined £500. So there you've got your answer, Dina to Machus Dina. This is the law of the land, irrespective of what the halacha is. Rav Fluch quotes a Gemara Yerushalmi in Demai, Gimel Beis, where Rav Shimon ben Kahana asks Rabbi Elazar, they're walking past a vineyard, and he says to Rabbi Elazar, bring me a little splinter from the fence, because I need a toothpick to clear something stuck between my teeth. So, is it allowed or is it not allowed? That's what he compares it to. He then says to Rabbi Elazar, no, don't do that, because if everybody would be taking a splinter for their teeth off this fence, then there wouldn't be any fence left in the end. So however small and tiny you think it is, it's still called stealing. This is discussed by the Maggid Mishnah Hilchos Gezeilah Perek Aleph Halacha Beis. He says, but if you do take a small splinter, does the owner of that fence really mind? That surely is what the question is. If the person is not particular about it, yeah, you want a tiny splinter, gazuntahai, I don't mind. Even if as a result of that, millions of splinters will be taken from it and you'll have no fence left. But the Yerushalmi says it's mitzvas chasidus not to touch that fence at all. And this is brought down into halacha, shulchan aruch, choshen mishpat, shin notes aleph. If the majority of people don't mind, and you are 100% sure that people wouldn't mind if you take a little splinter, then okay, gesundheit. But it's mitzvah chasidus not to. But this is really the question more than that. Because when it comes to downloading and using somebody else's hotspot, you've got to imagine it like a pipe flow. If you imagine a pipe flow with liquid going through at a certain speed, if you are using that other person's internet, then you are restricting that pipe flow. You are slowing down the water coming through. Because when you are using that internet, and that person is using his internet, it's slowing down his speed. Or he might not be able to then download any something which is heavy in memory, like music or videos or whatever it is. So the problem, says Rav Fluch, is that by diminishing the speed of that person's internet, you are stealing from him. And therefore, without the question of dina de Marcos Adina, if you are doing something which might make that person deprived, and you are possibly doing that by slowing down his speed, then that's called gazela. It's called stealing. And dina de Marcos Adina has, in fact, quite restrictive applications. It doesn't apply to everything, otherwise we would be doing away with half the Shulchan Aruch. It specifically is meant to apply to taxation, the subject of minting coins, and the generalized subject of law and order. But this does come under law and order. And the Shach in Choshen Mishpat, Ayin Gimel, Sifkot Lamed Vav, quotes the Ravad. He says, where the law is not explicit and there is no known custom, then we apply Dina de Malchus Adina. We must follow the secular law. So what if I want to borrow somebody's talis and tefillin? I come into shul and I forgot mine at home. Can I take somebody's tefillin? Oh, he's not coming till the second minyan. You say, well, is it really wear and tear? Is he really suffering from it? May I use it? Or you say, I'm only borrowing it, I'm not taking it. So the Nemukhe Yosef says in Baba Basra Memdalad, he says, when it's for a mitzvah, we can assume that other people want you to perform mitzvahs with their ownership with their articles. Then it's legitimate where there's no real wear and tear. You can use their talis, you can use their tefillin. Because you can assume that they're giving you their permission with their money. The Ritzvot comments on this. And where you can make that assumption for a mitzvah, that's about as far as it goes. But otherwise, no. There are other essays about the subject of internet, like if you send out a virus, obviously it's damaging other people's property. You're not allowed to send out a virus. But when you learn Bava Kamma, there are different kinds of damages. Our brothers Mazikin, there's the ox, which has the intention to be mazik. There's the fire, which goes with mazik with other properties attached to it. There is a human being. There is the pit we spoke about. Which category does it come under when you send out a computer virus? That's really the subject for another shiur, but the maskana is that it comes under aish. It comes under fire, where it's going to other people's properties, even that it needs the wind maybe to help it go along. So the virus is needing the electricity and other powerful forces to go forward. It's definite damage, but the question is how much compensation is determined according to which category of damage that it is. And so the suck is that it comes under H. So what we've been talking about generally is the subject of stealing. And we've mentioned it in yesterday's Sedra, Lo Signovu. It's one of the Aseret HaDibros. And yet, strangely, there are some people who seem to think that it's not such an important thing. I once had a friend who was a member of this shul for a while, Ian Schaffer, who once just said B'derech Melitza as a way of a joke. He said, really, maybe it would have been better had the rule of stealing been written in small print in Sharat Zion, in the very small print, the Yesh Lahachmir, and there is a Chumra, Lo Lignov, that one shouldn't steal, and then people might keep it more properly. But it's written in the Aseret HaDibros, and people tend to overlook it. It's innocent love, just like eating chazer is. How many people would eat pork? It's the same concept, it's the same Issur Lav, and it's a bigger punishment in the sense that you've got to pay back double or four or five times as much. But it is quite strange that there are some people who claim to be ultra-religious, ultra-orthodox, dressed in big hats and big beards, who go around the community saying, may I please borrow X number of pounds, without the intention of giving it back. It's happened to me, it's happened to others who I know, and this is downright stealing. And they assume that we're not going to go to the police because it's a high mashayid and I'm not going to report into the police and it's a zira. But I know one fellow who was going around promising people huge profits from his investments in shipping, where he did this on Yeshiva Bochum. He borrowed money and never gave it back. He then went to a barber, and when this barber gave him his haircut, agreed to lend him money and never got it back, this barber went to the police. And this fellow, ultra-Orthodox, sat in prison for 4 years. Stealing is stealing. And it doesn't really matter whether it's the pencil and rubber from your employer's office or whether it's all the other examples which you know and I don't have to mention. And what we've been discussing when it comes to internet piracy is just another one on the list. It's the same thing the Torah writes about, which has just come about more recently because of modern technology. The reason why Hashem sent the flood, or one of the main reasons why Hashem sent the flood at the time of Noah, was because of stealing. Geneva. And people think, oh, well, it doesn't really matter so much. There's a famous story of the Chofetz Chaim who asked somebody to post a letter, and this person delivered it by hand. And when the Chofetz Chaim found out about it, he tore up a postage stamp. Now, the question is, in halacha, does one have to do that? If one has not posted the letter, does one have to tear up a postage stamp? And it's agreed that you don't have to tear up the postage stamp. The halacha is, okay, you saved the money. You only have to pay the post office if you've actually posted the letter. But the Chofetz Chaim wanted to demonstrate Midas Hasidus. He was a very virtuous man. He wanted to demonstrate a certain point, so that is what he did as an example. But stealing is stealing. There's no way out of it, and anybody who does it will suffer the consequences. Thank you very much.